We don't just need to be great operators right now. We need to be good salesmen, right? And we got to be thinking about that because getting people off the government dole is really hard.
I'm just here trying to make government more efficient. Unless we're stopped, we will get to $1 trillion of savings.
Zach Abraham, good to see you, my friend.
Good to see you.
Yeah, how'd your webinar go? I know you were talking about the first 100 days of the Trump administration. Were people on the webinar melting down about the stock market, or were they generally using reason?
They were generally using reason. And, you know, that's the message that we've been trying to express is, look guys, there's things you should be concerned about. But in our opinion, we're not facing down an existential issue. You know, we're just facing down a scenario. And this happens all the time. You know, things run their course and you get regime change in markets and in politics. And when those regime changes happen, you have to pay attention and you need to act accordingly. And I just think that, you know, a lot of people have got very unrealistic expectations of the U.S. stock market. And I don't think that people understand what's driven it. And those factors have switched. And so it's not, you know, it's not get out of the U.S., sell the U.S. It's return to a non-U.S. only portfolio, right? And, you know, and be exposed to different assets and things that you probably haven't been exposed to a lot over the last 10 to 15 years. And why should you do that? Well, things have changed a lot. That's why you stare at fundamentals, and that's why you focus on the fundamentals.
Yeah, that's why you chill, you turn off MSNBC, you turn on Know Amen. Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, and you just get you
or
just
undivided.
Get the, or, well, you know, us too, but I'm not an economic genius like you are. I do know a little bit about what Doge is up to, though. So our top Doge story of the week, this epitomizes why Doge is necessary. So Ron DeSantis, I didn't even know this was a thing. I didn't even know this happened. So he sent out this tweet. For years, Florida has been trying to return federal funds to the federal government due to the ideological strings attached by the Biden administration. But the Biden administration couldn't even figure out how to accept it. Today, I met with Elon Musk and the Doge team, and we got this done in the same day. Other states should follow Florida in supporting Doge's efforts. So they've been trying to send back almost $1 billion, like $840 million. Because, you know, I was like, oh, the federal government's giving you money for XYZ, but there's ideological strings attached, so they don't want to accept the money. And then the federal government, like, wasn't taking it back, because I guess most states would say, we're not sending it back. We'll take that money. I mean, if that isn't exhibit A for how messed up our federal government is, I don't know what is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, have they not heard of Venmo?
Hey, I mean, just Venmo me.
Yeah.
Cash App.
Send me that $870 million via Venmo, would you? No, and look, it's, you know, and we're going to, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but it brings me, you know, we're going to talk about messaging, right? Is messaging right, and all that kind of stuff. In my opinion, and Trump may be the right guy to do this, he may not be. I think that there should be a separate press conference once a week. Maybe limited in time, but explaining to people in real time, like I think so much of the outcry and freaking out is just ridiculous, right? Yeah. That being said, when you're doing the things that he's going to do or that he's attempting to do, the less outcry and the less chaos you have, the better off you are.
Yeah.
Right. The more that people understand these things, so I do think they need to redouble their efforts in explaining to people. And I think you and I had this conversation a little while ago where I said, look. In my opinion, the administration needs to get out ahead of this and say, yes, guys, we're going to rein this in. We're going to rein in government waste and government spending. But there are potential downsides to doing that. And Bessent has echoed that sentiment, right? But I definitely think you need to explain more to these people and explain, guys, just like everything else in life, doing the right thing doesn't always feel like the right thing. As a matter of fact, most of the time it doesn't, right? There's pain associated with making correct decisions. The reason we do that is that the pain up front is a much smaller dividend compared to the pain out back or down the road that you're going to get from doing nothing, right? I keep seeing these tweets where like Doge isn't saving nearly as much. This is all over. But and I go, okay, let's assume it continues to stay that way and Doge doesn't come anywhere close to the numbers they thought. Why in the world does that deter you from Doge or make you not support it? If the government is wasting 1% of our annual budget, which would happen to be about $60 billion, That's real money, man. $60 billion. What are we talking about? Right? Any level of waste or fraud is unacceptable. Now, is it unavoidable? Sure, at a budget that big. But the pushback against people trying to rein in wasteful or fraudulent government spending is insane. But to answer your question, I do think that we should be communicating these things better, and explaining to people on a relative and regular basis, look, here's what we're doing, here's why, this is how they're wasting your money. Unfortunately, we can't trust our press to do the job that they should. So we're going to do these meetings once a week to report to the American people what's actually happening, as opposed to listening to somebody else lose their mind on MSNBC.
Yeah, and actually, it does bring us into our Doge Myth of the Week. So I'll go back to some of the top stories we want to talk about. But in our Doge Myth of the Week, there is this story, and we've seen highlights of this sort of coming up elsewhere, where you've got Republicans or Republican areas that are starting to feel the impacts of some of the Doge cuts. And so I know the media puts it forth as, oh, Doge is even hurting Republicans. Yeah, it's kind of the point, is that, you know, the waste isn't just going to affect jobs in Democratic areas. It's funny how they set that up as some big shocker. If they're cutting what they should, it's going to impact people of all stripes. But it says Utah's Republican voters fume over Doge cuts. So it talks about how some Republican members of Congress, when they go back to their districts and they're having town halls, they're being confronted by angry workers. In Utah's first congressional district, for instance, there was a town hall where the congressman was confronted by local IRS employees furious about Doge's actions, including some individuals who'd lost their jobs. That, to me, is where the communication comes in, and where I do think that, to your point, Doge could get better. It's saying, like, look, yeah, people are going to lose their jobs, and that's never fun, and that's never cool. And because I think so much of Doge is like, yeah, rah, 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 like, we're cutting government waste, without maybe being sympathetic enough to the real lives that are being impacted by it.
Oh, I 100% agree. And yet at the same time, I've pushed back against this because, again, you know, I'm probably not the best person to ask. You probably aren't either, as entrepreneurial people, right? But listening to I'm less sympathetic to it than I should be, but you're not owed anything.
Yeah.
If you don't like the job security in your job, go get another one. Why is that my problem, right? When my company, when we were starting out and we were shoestringing it and bubblegum, I didn't gripe about that. I knew the choices we had made. I knew that I could barely keep my kids' house over their heads. I almost lost my house in the process, right? There were times I couldn't fill up the gas tank. Those were the choices that I made. And I am so freaking tired of a lapse or a complete absence of caveat emptor. Your life predominantly is a amalgamation and an addition problem, right? It is a summation of the choices you have made. And if you don't like the outcomes, make different choices, right? Like, now, that's me fuming.
Right.
Right. Trump can't really address that or do anything with it, right? Because you can't just change culture. But this is one of the things that has scared me about our culture, because it's not about, do we have the intelligence, or are there enough people that understand what we should do? I think there are. And I think Trump's election proved that. The problem I have is that I'm not sure there are enough people that have the stomach to endure what actually needs to happen. Okay, when you get to $37 trillion in debt and you're running 7% deficits of GDP and you're running $2 trillion deficits, there are things that you're going to need to do to put your house in order that aren't going to feel good. There are people that have jobs that are paying them well that they're happy with. The problem is they're not delivering any value because the job isn't needed, right?
I would say just devil's advocate, though. You know, these are jobs. Yeah, communication. And like, if you're an IRS employee, you don't know that your job's not necessarily. I mean, you might be sitting there every day not doing anything, like, wow, my job's really not necessary. But for some, you know, and all of a sudden you're without a job and it's like cold, you know, and it's, and I agree. If they're getting rid of jobs, the jobs probably weren't necessary. But I think you still have to tactfully explain to people, like, because there's politics involved, right? A lot of this is optics. And you got to not be so stone cold about it if you're Doge, because you want people to accept what you're doing. And so I agree with you that having, you know, a weekly briefing, I don't think it should be Elon Musk. I don't think he's the best communicator. A weekly briefing about here's what we cut or identified that needs to be cut. Here's why. Here's how many people might lose their jobs. And you know, that sucks. And we're going to try to work with them to make it a soft landing. Like that would be, let's do that.
Yep. Yeah. Well, so to go to your point, because here's the other thing you have to remember, right? Remember, and I think this is more true for all the reasons we've been talking about it than it's ever been true, which is it's not just get the job done that we want to get it done, right? It's get it done in such a way that you don't just completely undo what you've done in the next election, right? Because that's kind of what's been going on with both parties, right? Yeah. We'll get something done and you just erase it. And so it's two steps forward, two steps back. We're never actually going anywhere except the wrong direction, right? Because this object in motion is staying in motion. So I would even say, and I understand the danger in what I'm saying, because there's also that impetus to, hey, we finally have control of things. We got to make hay while the sun's shining, right? But you really have to marry those things up, in my opinion. And I think you need to, in my mind, where I'm sitting here today, I think it may be even appropriate to take a little bit more of a gradual approach to Doge and almost make it like, you know, try to recreate like a fireside chat with the country once a week, walking them through this, giving them warnings about, okay, the next thing we're going to pull off is this, and make it more gradual. So you lessen the chances of a nasty negative economic outcome. Desperately find it. So if you can show people, okay, we've had a little bit increase in unemployment, but inflation is staying in check. The deficit is coming down. We're doing this gradually. You know, it's like your baby. Remember, like, what about Bob?
Yeah.
Baby steps, baby step into the elevator, right? But just baby stepping them, because, you know, we need to do the right things in this country at the same time, not trying to sound hyperbolic, but it really is a fight over the soul of the country right now.
Yeah.
Right. And we need to have a proper bedside manner, because like just with me blowing off, you know, I think everything I said is 100% true.
Yeah.
Is that going to help engender me to the people that don't agree? No. And we need to be thinking about that. Not only, we don't just need to be great operators right now, we need to be good salesmen, mm-hmm. right? And we got to be thinking about that, because getting people off the government dole is really hard. It's really hard. And it's usually almost completely, basically impossible, right? To get people. So we need to almost treat that task with the respect it deserves. And I think that, in my opinion, it's a sales issue, and I wish they were selling it a little bit differently, and I think they should.
Yeah, and for a bunch of the country, it won't matter. It doesn't matter how soft their touch is. I mean, you've got people who are lighting Teslas on fire because Elon Musk is cutting government waste. So I don't think that a fireside chat every week is going to get those people to you know, step off the ledge.
I don't know. Maybe you and I talked about this, but are you aware that Tesla registrations in this country are about 80-20 Democrat?
Oh, that doesn't surprise me, because it was like Elon was a darling of the left, and Tesla as an electric vehicle was like, yay, Elon, until he was
the savior.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's great. I've never seen it. I'm used to quick narrative switches, but how quickly we went from the only moral choice is an EV to now I'm making a moral choice by trading my Tesla in for a Chevy Tahoe. That made my head spin. That was the quickest about face I'd ever seen.
I saw all these memes, like maybe Elon Musk should buy Planned Parenthood, and then the left will be protesting abortion. Or there was like Donald Trump, I found the cure to cancer, and there'd be people outside the White House like, we have a right to die of cancer.
So it's just, it's so true. And then, like you said, they're lighting up their own team, right?
Yeah.
And they're doing it to cars that are recording all of it.
It's like, have they not figured that out yet? That everybody has their, it's like called sentient, what is it? Is that it? Something like that mode.
Sentry mode.
Every angle of that car is recording you. Are you not on the internet? Do you not know that?
Here's the other thing. Not a single liberal politician has come out and told people not to do that. But many of them have issued what I would call tacit endorsements.
Actually agree, because Mayor Harrell did that in Seattle, where he's like, I understand why people are mad. I mean, don't do that. However, wink, wink. I get it.
This is another perfect example of the total disdain they have for their own constituency. They do that fully knowing all the things you and I are talking about, that these Teslas are recording them, they're going to get caught, you're not doing anything because Chant, overwhelmingly, especially like in a city of Seattle, if you're keying a Tesla, you're keying somebody on your team, right? These politicians know that. They don't even care that their own constituents are going to jail for this. They're tacitly endorsing it. It is the most confounding thing, especially in cities like Seattle. It is Stockholm syndrome. It really is. It's like they have fallen in love with their captors and their abusers. Just in our state, you know, for people listening, that natural gas ruling that we had last week is a classic example of that. You talked all about that, but no, it's
Well, and it's I kind of hope though that, so I watched this Fox 13, Channel 13 in Seattle story where a woman who's clearly a liberal was driving a Tesla. She had it for 2 years, was stopped. Somebody whipped in front of her on the highway, stopped in front of her, got out, was dressed in camouflage, face covered, and started like, that's a Nazi car. Somebody's going to get killed. And she's in there saying like, I don't have the car because of my politics and all this stuff. But I'm hopeful that wakes up some people on the left to how crazy the left has become. Because, I mean, like, you're right. The chances are the Tesla that you're lighting on fire, keying, wiping human feces on, which did happen, and dog feces, probably belongs to a liberal, and you're probably alienating them, which I'm perfectly fine with. So anyway, better messaging for the reasonable Americans who have a heart and are concerned that some of these things aren't being carried out very graciously, but for the rest of them, it doesn't matter. All right, one thing I want to go back to, so we talk about this like balance between fraud and waste, and does it really matter, and is anyone going to be held accountable? So one thing that Doge Washington has uncovered quite a bit of is spending that has a direct tie to a politician. Mm-hmm. So maybe the politician sits on their board. Maybe the politician used to work for them or wants to work for them after they leave office. Some sort of connection. Doesn't mean it's fraud, but it definitely is something that's worthy of giving a closer look at. Is this spending because of the tie or spending independent of the tie to that politician? So Donald Trump has now been briefed on the EPA had given out billions of dollars that were questionable, but specifically $2 billion to an NGO that is tied to Stacey Abrams. Here's the clip.
EPA has now canceled over $22 billion worth of contracts. $2 billion going to this NGO that Stacey Abrams was tied to. They received only $100 in 2023. And then the Biden administration gave them $2 billion. The director of the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund saw his former employer get $5 billion. So $20 billion went to just 8 NGOs, and they're all pass-throughs. And then they were giving it to other entities. Many of them were pass-throughs. And what you have is all these extra middlemen, they're taking their cut. And the taxpayer ends up getting screwed. They're losing out on all this hard-earned money. They can't afford to have the federal government waste.
Yeah, so that was Trump being briefed on this. I guess it's tough because you have these politicians who have their tentacles all throughout a bunch of stuff, and these NGOs or nonprofits or whatever it is. I mean, does there need to be a hard and fast rule for it? Because how do you prove that one NGO or one nonprofit was prioritized because of a politician who has a tie to it?
You can't.
Yeah.
And it's why I'm a huge fan of just making a complete moratorium against it. If you want to serve in public office, you cannot operate in any way, shape, or form, in any industry that you had a direct hand in regulating, dealing with, passing legislation for a period of at least 5 years. And the reason for it is it's too tempting. Meaning it is enabling fraud that isn't even being called fraud. Okay, like because this guy might, you know, there's nothing untoward here. Look at his salary. It's complete. The only reason he got the job is because of who he knows in the state legislature. And that guy happens to sit on this board and he's going to get him that contract. And it happens every day. And if you don't think it doesn't happen, you're lying to yourself, right?
Well, it was massive with the CCA. So the Climate Commitment Act, Inslee pushes it, right? One of the senators who was key instrumental in it, State Senator Reuven Carlisle in Washington, a Democrat. So they get the CCA through. Guess what Senator Reuven Carlisle is doing now? He's not in the Senate anymore. He's making a fortune off of off of working in the climate sector that's being directly funded by the proceeds of the Climate Commitment Act. So right. It's like, dude, it should, you're right. I mean, it has to be a moratorium because you're never able, there's nothing that stops a lawmaker from, let me be a lawmaker for 5 years, get this policy pushed through, and then I'm going to start a business that directly benefits from the policy that I push through. I mean, there has to be a moratorium on it.
Yeah. And here's, to me, this is why. Okay. So sometimes there are certain circumstances, and I think this is one of them, where the idea of regulation is laughable.
Yeah.
Okay. Because all the incentive, you can regulate whatever you want. The problem is the incentives are all the opposite direction, right? So a similar situation to me was Glass-Steagall. Okay, I'm going to go back a little bit. Glass-Steagall was a law that was passed right after, in quick succession, right after the Great Depression, not after it was over. We're still in the malaise. I believe Glass-Steagall was passed in the 33, 32, somewhere around there. But what Glass-Steagall said was it was a beautiful regulation on the financial industry that required no regulation, right? And it said, if you are a commercial bank, if you are a if you are a regular, you know, bank for the average consumer, if you're an investment bank, if you're an insurance company, that's fine. You cannot be a combination, okay? And if you are a combination, you're in violation of the Glass-Steagall Act, and we will break you up, okay? So that law stood until 1998, okay? That's when it was repealed. And interestingly enough, 6 months before that law was repealed, a guy by the name of Sandy Weill, who at that time was the CEO of Citigroup, merged illegally his company with Travelers Insurance. And everybody at the time was like, how can this stand? And I remember at the time going, because Sandy Weill's like one of the like OGs of Wall Street. And so you're sitting there going, if Sandy Weill did this, he knows something,
yep.
Right? 6 months later, Glass-Steagall gets repealed,
yep.
Okay? There now, during the period of time from 33 to 98, when Glass-Steagall finally got repealed, you didn't have a single financial crisis in this country outside of the savings and loan issue that involved very few companies in the 80s, okay? Very few banks, okay? Within 9 years of repealing of Glass-Steagall, you had the biggest financial crisis in the history of our country going back to the Great Depression. But what was so effective about that form of regulation is it just said no,
mm-hmm.
Right? It wasn't getting in there trying to call balls and strikes. And there's certain situations, our government, and for all reasons that you and I know, the answer to every hard question is regulation, right? Well, regulation, of course they're in favor of regulation. It gives them bigger headcounts and bigger budgets, right? It also gives them greater locus of control over industries, which allows them what, right? Greater incentives for those industries to hire them and make them rich after they've served in the public sector. No. And I'm not saying regulation is bad, but I'm saying sometimes the best form of regulation is just a no. And in situations that involve money like this, especially taxpayer money, you cannot get in there and regulate that. You just have to say no. And that's why I'm for that moratorium.
Yeah, because I agree. I mean, I don't love overregulation from government, but if you had something that's sort of simplistic that you cannot, as a former elected official, work for an entity that gets taxpayer funds for at least 5 years, or something more simple that could be all encompassing, because that's the problem, right? You're funding it, and then you're going to work for it, and you're benefiting off the funding. I know it's complicated, but it happens way too much.
Not to mention the fact, why are they hiring you in the first place? They're hiring you for access. Let's be honest,
right? Of course. I mean,
that's why you're getting the job.
That's the only reason anyone would hire Jay Inslee, because
he's a doodler. If you needed somebody to doodle, I think you might hire him.
He could be a doodler. He loves to paint. He loves to doodle. Loves to draw.
He loves to.
Maybe I'll buy one of his pieces of art.
He also loves to sit in on legal decisions where he already knows the answer. I hear that's a big, he's a big fan of that.
Yeah, too. Big fan of that. Huge.
Little kabuki theater. Who doesn't like some kabuki
Good
theater?
Good Lord. All right, let's end with this in other Doge adjacent news. Could Doge prevent the federal government from hiring the next generation of federal workers? So this is from NBC News. I already know what you're going to say about this. Lawmakers fear Doge cuts will drive away the next generation of federal workers. Members of both parties warn that Trump and Musk's efforts will severely hinder the government's ability to recruit young people and technical experts. So let's just be fair about it, right? So if you've got Doge that's coming in there and slashing and, you know, getting rid of departments, I mean, if you're a young person and you're trying to make a good decision with your career, I guess that could drive you away from wanting to work for the federal government.
I mean, unless you need to pay your rent.
and you're just going to do it. Yeah.
Yeah, you're just going to get a job. So if people need jobs and you're offering them, people will take them.
Yeah.
And if that means that you lean the government down a lot and you cut, let's say you cut 1.1 million jobs and you realize that we probably need to hire about 150,000 of those people back to fill those gaps, you might have to offer 10% pay incentives. Okay, but guess what? That's still a lot less than the 1.1 million people that you were employing.
Yep.
Like, I swear to God, and it, of course it comes from government people, but you hear stories like this and you're sitting there going, you know, somewhere somebody has the job where they're getting paid to sit around and think about nonsensical problems that will never exist and make them headlines.
Yeah.
And that's the job I want.
Oh.
I mean, yeah. I mean, talk about cake. And they're probably getting paid really well too, right? But they, I mean, this is just so nonsensical. Yeah, there's going to be jobs that offer pensions and full medical and $70,000 salaries, and just nobody's going to want them because they're afraid of DOGE. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I mean, if a job has to exist, it must exist, they will find a way to fill it, to your point.
Yes.
And, you know,
yes.
I see people protesting outside of USPS, like save postal worker jobs. And it's like, but we don't need the post office. We can fully privatize it. The post office sucks anyway. And those postal workers, they can find a job with Amazon, UPS, FedEx, DHL, any other number of private entities that are finding more success in that space and that are growing every single day. So it's like,
yeah,
you're acting like just because they can't do it for the federal government, they'll never be able to do it at all anywhere ever.
Well, yeah, and even if they were to shut it down, right, if the people have already earned their, if they've done the service to earn their pension, they still get to keep that.
Yeah.
It's not like that gets taken away. The other thing, too, is some of this stuff sounds mean. Okay, just, so again, being adults, we just got to deal with the facts sometimes and stare them dead in the face, right? Sustaining somebody's job that is no longer economically viable or productive is doing nobody a favor. Okay, it's just not. And the reason why I say that is that what are you doing? That person, whether they're aware of it or not, they've got opportunity cost, meaning they are fighting to stay in a dying entity, which means their prospects going forward in that entity are zero, right? There's no real progress there. They're eventually going to have to switch anyway. You know what I mean? Like, meaning it's this childish Pollyannish view. Well, it's sad because somebody's losing their job. How do you know they're not going to have a much better job 6 months down the road?
Yeah.
The reason that job is going away is because it's not economically viable. Okay. That's not their fault. That's not DOGE's fault. It's not the president's fault. Okay. Blame it on big, bad, mean life. But what we have to do is we got to adapt to conditions on the ground. Right. And, you know, like you said, there's a messaging thing. And I definitely think in our society today, we need to be more conscious of that. And strictly because, let's face it, people are like that are sitting there saying, you know, bootstrap it and do what you and I are advocating. We're the very, you know, we're the certainly the minority.
Yeah.
Right. That's not normal. And that's part of sales. Right. You got to know who your audience is. So I think we're going to have to play this a little bit softer. Which isn't the style. I love the slash. There's parts of it where I wish Trump would go a little slower and be like, but part of me loves the slash and burn because I just love watching these bureaucrats freak out. I find it very entertaining. That being said, I've always got to remind myself, Zach, do not do what you want to do in lieu of what is most effective. Right.
Yeah.
And I think that we're at a point in this country where we need to make sure we're not just sticking it to the libs per se, but we're doing it in a strategic way so we can keep, because let's face it, this country's got more problems than one 4-year presidential term, right? So we need to be playing chess here and thinking about how we fix these problems over the next 8 to 12 years rather than just saying we're going to force feed all these changes down everybody's throat in 4.
Yeah, I agree. And I will just also point out, do Democrats care about the mine workers that they put out of a job in the interest of like clean energy?
Right. What about those people?
Yeah, I mean, there's people who their jobs aren't necessary or they're regulated out of their jobs and you don't see the same. And then it's like, oh, but you can get a job in wind energy or whatever it is. And that's totally fine. So the government, we cannot look at the government's job role being to keep people employed. That just doesn't make any sense. So, all right, still bullish on Doge?
100%. Keep it rolling.
Love it. All right, see you next week.
All right, thank you so much.